Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. The scales of Lady Justice are imbalanced, especially against people of color. We must continue to fight against this grave imbalance to ensure a humane, just future for all the people of color, our children, for the homeless, for the poverty-stricken, for the weary and beaten of America. All across our country, we must demand that justice be served for all people, regardless of color, black, white, brown, red, yellow, and all others. Whatever color you want to be, you deserve justice. The American criminal justice system is totally absent. There is no such thing as justice here in America for people of color. The criminalization of the United States citizen by the injustice system is now one of America's largest industrial. Prisons have become privatized and inmates compromised. Cheap labor for the big corporation, Whirlpool, Apple Computers, Defense Industrial, among many others. The United States of America not only has the highest percentage of its population in prison, it has the highest absolute number, substantially higher than authoritarian China, a country whose population is four times larger than the United States, but a country with fewer people in prison than the United States. That should tell you something. But the people here in America are too brainwashed to see it. They come in defense of the police, those murdering police. And what they do, they murder, they ambush, they bushwhack our people. We must stand together and stop allowing people to praise prosecutors for filing false charges and police officers for killing our people. I just want to say to each and every one of you, the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. tells blacks that if one of the greatest among them or among us is not safe from the assassin's bullet, then what can the least of us hope for? In this content, those young black militants who have resorted to violence feel vindicated. Look what happened to Martin Luther King, they say. He was nonviolent. He didn't hurt anybody. And look what they did to him. If we have to go down, let's go down fighting. We got to change the way we do business. I got on my show today one of my favorite brothers, my guy, my friend, Mr. Ashe. He's not only a great activist, he's a great human being, one who I love very, very much. He has a lovely wife. And he is what he is. He's a musician. And he's many other things. But most important of all, he's my friend. And I love him. Minister.
Yes, sir.
Ashe, yeah. Come in. How you doing today?
I'm blessed and highly favored, and so are you, Reverend Pinckney.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. I'm excited. I'm going to tell you, just like it is, I'm very, very excited to have a man like you on my show. And it's a blessing. See, people don't realize what a blessing is until it's too late. Just like when I was in the prison system, going to the bathroom, once you get home, it's a privilege. I mean, you don't have to stand around and you got 20 people watching you use the bathroom. You don't even know how comfortable I am now, just able to use the bathroom. It's a shame. I got to say this on the air. I just love being in the bathroom. You know, and that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Listen, that's enough about me. Let us talk a little bit about what you want to talk about. Talk to me.
First of all, I want to give all praises and all honor to the Most High. If you're English speaking, you'll say to God. If you're Hebrew Israelites, you'll say to Yahweh or Yahweh. If you're Muslim, you'll say to Allah. And if you are any number of other things, you might just say, if you're Kemite, you might say Ra or Amen. But the Most High, creator and sustainer of the heavens and the earth, is who I want to give all praises to, first of all, because he, and in the Hebrew, he and she, because Yah is masculine, Va is feminine, father and mother, creator and sustainer, and also to my Savior, Yahshua, the Messiah, if you speak Hebrew, speak English, Jesus the Christ. So I try to walk in that faith of a resurrected Savior. I try to. It's not always easy. I am Minister Kujenga Elia Ashe. I am the ambassador to the United Nations for the Hebrew Israelites scattered to the four corners of the earth. I went to the United Nations last year with my wife, and we demanding reparations and repatriations for all that wanted them. There are black Indians that were here in America 14,000 years before Columbus even stepped on the shore. And when he came, it was Angostino Nino, the Moorish man, the Mobite, who captained the head ship, the Nina. You know, he had the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. The Nina, Captain Nina, was the Moor, a black man, who showed him how to get here. And, of course, we know the rest of the history, that they brought Hebrew interpreters so that when they got off the ship, they could speak to the natives. And most of the natives that they found were brown skin folks that look like what we would say Africans today. But that's a little known history. You got two authors that write a lot about that. Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, one of my teachers back in the 70s when I was at Ohio State University as a kid. He wrote the book They Came Before Columbus. And then you have a new man who's writing now about the first Americans were Africans. So you need to check that out. Then, of course, we know about the slave trade and how they enslaved our folks and brought us over here and raped us and beat us to death and all of that. And the abolitionist movement was started up by runaway slaves. It wasn't started by white people. The runaway slaves started the abolitionist movement. And then it was 100% successful. They got white people that would help them, well-meaning white people that were Quakers and Shakers, and got the chains off of us, the physical chains off of us, caused the Civil War. But we got the chains off of us. The Most High let these people kill 6 million of each other, 2 million from the North and 4 million from the South. Young boys as young as 13 in the South were killed during the Civil War. The abolitionist movement was a total success, led by Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth. And they all played their roles. I'm sure Sojourner Truth whispered in Lincoln's ear, I knew your grandmother. You know, she's a black woman. I know about you. That's a little known fact. You have to read J.A. Rogers' book, The Five Negro Presidents. And Harriet Tubman, she said, I freed 1,000 slaves. I'd have freed 1,000 more if they would have known that they were slaves.
Amen.
And then, of course, Frederick Douglass, he organized the black troops that fought. And about the only reason that I honor the American flag is because the black troops carried that flag when they fought against the Confederacy. I know it was the flag that flew over the slave ships. I know it was the flag that many horrible things, people were lynched. But the black soldiers carried that flag against the Confederacy, so I honor it for that reason and that reason alone. It's evolved to that level for me. I had to preface my remarks with that because the abolitionist movement gave rise to the civil rights movement. And in the civil rights movement, we got the franchise or the right to vote, which they're still fighting, trying to cut it down, but we've got it. And we can stay in any hotel or any go to any college if you got the money to go. So the abolitionist movement got the chains off of us. Physically, we're free to walk around, go to the store. Like you said, Reverend Preakney, we can go to the bathroom and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're not in the prison. And civil rights movement got us the franchise. But now we're in a new era. And I've coined a new movement called the Economic Rights Movement. You can look it up on YouTube. The Most High is the founder. I'm just the guy. You know, people say I found it, but the Economic Rights Movement deals with getting our wealth. As the young kids say, getting our cheddar, getting our cheese, getting our land, getting our lands back, whether our lands are here in America, you're part of the Granville Black Indian Group or the Gullah Geechee people, the Black Indians, or the folks who lived in Louisiana who were here long before the Europeans came, or whether your land is in Israel, your spiritual DNA is from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whether your spiritual DNA is from Egypt, Kemet, in other words, ancient language, or whether your DNA is from the Moorish people, the Moabites, in Northwest Africa. I would prefer to call it Eden because the garden was in the east part. You ever see my business card, the map is turned upside down. Really, it's right side up for me because the Nile River flows north. Alexander the Great, really, Alexander the Second, Alexander of Macedonia, real title, turned it around and put Europe on top of the world. So, you know, it's like in the Bible, it says these men that you've brought in here come to turn the world upside down. Well, yeah, that's really a false accusation. We really come to turn it right side up. But the Economic Rights Movement, you find it on YouTube. All of your listeners, if they want to go and see any of my videos on YouTube, just type in the Economic Rights Movement, not civil rights, the Economic Rights Movement. Because basically our main problem right now is these big banks, big insurance companies, 2,000 multinational corporations. They're controlling all the wealth, 90% of the wealth, 1% of the people. Most of them are European or white or British or American. 1% of the people are controlling 90% of the wealth of the planet. And not until we get rid of monopoly finance capitalism, not just regular old free enterprise. Free enterprise is different. You know, there's no more real free enterprise. You're not going to compete with the big glass companies or the big steel companies or the big oil companies or big manufacturing companies or the big banks, the World Bank, Federal Reserve Bank of America. These people have a monopoly. Monopoly, and then they finance everything. You go to a finance company. You need a house, you got to go to a mortgage company. You need a car, you got to go to a auto loan company. You need a whatever you want, go through a bank or insurance company or finance company. And these people are wealthy beyond the average person's imagination. And you're not going to move any further until the means of exchange becomes love versus money, whether it's money in terms of paper dollars, fiat money, even gold or silver, or even credit cards or debit cards or even computer credit. People are going to have to change, and we're going to have to love each other as brothers and sisters. Think of all the older women, elder women as our mothers, all the younger ones as our sisters, all of our elder men as our fathers, all the younger ones as our brothers. Like in the book of Acts, Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4, it's recorded that they shared everything in common.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm saying is way above a lot of people's thoughts right now, because you haven't thought about an economic rights movement. You're still stuck in the civil rights era. But, you know, you have basically...
I'm losing you, my brother.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me go. I'm losing a little. I'm on a cell phone. Once again, monopoly finance capitalism is the root cause of the problems we're facing right now. And if not, can you hear me now, Reverend Pinkney?
I can hear you quite well. Go right ahead.
Okay. I had to move outside. Monopoly finance capitalism is the root cause of what's the problems that we are facing now. So we need an economic rights movement to quell this this 1%. My wife coined the phrase the 1%ers. The 1%ers are the reason that we're having most of our problems. People are robbing and selling dope because the 1%ers have all the wealth. And What do I want with the economic rights movement? We have a Facebook page called the Economic Rights Movement. What do I want? I want to end the evil system of monopoly finance capitalism, which causes imperialism around the world, which causes the main problems that we're facing in our communities here in America, in our hometowns, the 2,000 major multinational corporations. So the economic rights movement, that's what we need. We need to be about that. Now, you've got the Million Woman March coming up October 28th, and Empress Chi and Sister Angela and all the sisters, we've got the brothers in support. I'd like for people to support that. But I would also like to see people, when they do that, talk about the economic rights movement as they go to D.C. in October. We also need a new name. We talk about being, when they drug us off the boats, we were Edenites. I talk about being from the Garden of Eden. We're paradise people, but they called us the N-word. And then as we progressed through our abolitionist movement, we became colored. As we got to the civil rights movement, we became Negro, became Black. As we got to further African Americans. I'm saying now we need to go back to being from the Garden of Eden. We need to be Edenites, E-D-E-N-I-T-E-S, paradise people. That's where we need to go. We need a new names. You know, I don't even call myself a Christian. I call myself a Messiah, not the Messiah, a Messiah. Mm-hmm. At Antioch, they were first called Messiahs. The word Christian or Christos means shiny. They were calling the white people that were followers of the Messiah, they were calling them, when they were around the fires warming themselves, they had shiny faces. And the white people would say, shiny face, ha, 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 or Christo, Christo, ha, 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 and laugh at them. And later on, Constantine made Christo or the name of the ministry. So, you know, but it was Messiah, M-E-S-S-I-Y-H or M-E-S-S-I-Y-H. So we're messiahs, and, you know, so I've got a lot of new things. When I answer the phone, I don't say hello, hell is low. I say heaven's high. So I got a lot of different kind of stuff, but that's what God has given me. That's what the Most High has given me. That's what Yahweh, the eternal one, Yah meaning eternal, like hallelujah, Vah meaning one. My spiritual DNA leans toward the Hebrew Israelites, but I'm an Edenite overall. You can be an Edenite of the Hebrew Israelites nation, you can be an Edenite of the Moabite nation, you can be an Edenite of the Kemite nation, you can be an Edenite of the Brazilian or South American or Native American nations, whatever they might be called. So I'm just putting forth humbly my suggestions as to what I think we should be teaching our children. We should be teaching them a different kind of a language. We should be teaching them new terms and letting them forge ahead with new stuff, instead of just using the old stuff.
Absolutely.
Finally, Brother Pinckney, as I conclude, I just want to say I love you and I thank you for this time. Now, I spent 16 years in a Michigan prison on a false charge.
Mm-hmm.
16 long years. So I know what you went through with your 2.5 years here recently, but the 16 years, I'm still trying to get my case overturned. I'm going back to 1992 to 2008. If you lay out 16 calendars, I did them all, did every last one of them.
Wow.
So I'm at the point now where I know what you went through, because I went through it, and I feel for anybody that goes through that prison industrial complex, because it's one hell of a system, and I do mean hell. I did a statutory life sentence for a crime that I did not commit, and I know that you were framed, and I know that I was framed, and I know a whole lot of other people were framed and thrown into the prison. So basically, I'm at the point now where I'm fighting the prison-industrial complex. As President Eisenhower said, I'm fighting the military-industrial complex, which is the big corporations and the intelligence agencies and all the scientists and all this stuff that keep them watch on everybody on the planet. I'm fighting the medical-industrial complex, which is, you know, got people on this dialysis and all this stuff and killing people and telling them they got all kinds of diseases and keeping the cancers going so they can make money off of us. And I'm also finding the educational industrial complex, which brainwashes our children and makes them think that after they get their education, all they can do is go work for somebody else.
Mm.
A lot of times, the minimum wage. So all of these industrial complexes are evil things, and we have got to fight these things. And I'm just so glad that we have a man like you, Reverend Pinckney, who is willing to stand up. I remember you brought me to Benton Harbor. My wife and I were on the stage with Danny Glover. And I remember we had a grand time at one of your anniversaries. And at that point, I said, this is a man who I can trust. So I'm telling everybody in Banco and my organization, the Community Organization for Abundant Life, I'm telling everybody, you know, we can trust Reverend Everett Pinckney. You know, if he says it, it needs to be done, then let's get it done. While you were in the prison, of course, you know, I put a petition out to try and get you out on Facebook. I went on change.org. I petitioned President Obama to get you out, to give you a pardon and clemency. I went to Congressional Black Caucus to get you out. But none of those people would give us any help. You know, I talked to Reverend Al Sharpton, Reverend Jesse Jackson, all of them trying to get Reverend Pinckney out of jail, but nobody would give me any help. But praise be to God Almighty, Yahweh, the living Elohim, if you speak Hebrew, that you're out. So that's my story, Reverend Pinckney. I'm not going to take up all your time, but somebody might have a question. But I sure do appreciate your time, and thank you for letting me have this airtime.
Absolutely, and I want to thank you. You know, that was some good history you gave us. And, I really appreciate you. You know, having you and your wife here several times, with your general knowledge of everything. Hey, and also I wanted you to know that Saturday wasn't just a normal event. It was a tremendous event. I mean, it was an overflow of people. I mean, I didn't expect that many people to show up, but I guess when the word go out, people would come in and show out. So we got to stick together, unification, stand together against this monster. Well, listen, I got to move on, Minister Shea. I want to thank you so much. But look, we're going to talk soon, and I see where you're going with this. All right? Thank you so much, my brother. I'm going to bring on my good friend, the person who visited me when I was in prison, Marcino. Marcino, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, fine. Yes. You know what? There's a lot to talk about these days, and a lot to take care of. You know, have an action plan. So many things are plaguing us in this country, particularly our rights being chiseled away, violation of our constitutional rights to speak and assemble. And that is the Constitution when it comes down to the First Amendment. But I wanted to say, I want to bring up about the Patriot Act that was implemented after 9/11. And what's happening is that we're under surveillance. It was supposed to have been when George Bush had signed into law to prevent a terrorist attack, but it turned around to basically attack the citizens in America. We became the enemy of the state in this country. And what's happening here right now in 2017, that we are being listening by law enforcement, over 34,000 law enforcement intelligence agents are going through our emails, our social media, our phones, even with my conference calls that I have. There's been infiltration by the government. We can't worry about that, but keep in mind that we are under attack, and we became the enemy by law enforcement. And I bring that up because it's been an upsurge of law enforcement, the police officers that's attacking a particular people of color, also attacking and killing Hispanics too. There's a very disturbing trend about that, and it started off way back to 1700s, slave patrol. We got infiltration of the KKK that's in the police force. Obviously, it's institutionalized racism in the police department, not just white police officers, but a person of color also have killed another person looks just like them. But it has been increased. There's no adequate information, accurate information regarding how many killings of black people in various years by the hands of the police. They don't keep up with it. The government does not keep up with it. They just don't have the accurate data. We have to keep up. It's so much of that going on every day. Anytime that you drive your vehicle, police have their siren lights on you. It might be the last time you'll be on this earth. That's very disturbing to me. They can stop you on a traffic stop, and the police can say that I feared for my life. This is what I'm hearing repetitiously when they pull a black man over or a black woman over and she ends up dead. And these police officers, they do not go to jail, prison, not charged. They are acquitted by them killing a black person if our lives don't matter. And I'm very disturbed about that, because every day, there's three a day, and we're talking about 365 days in a year, thousands of black people have been killed by the hands of the police. Not just, I won't stop to say, okay, we're not having it in our own community. Yes, we do have in black community where blacks are killing blacks, and that's because the fact is many of the black communities are poor, and communities, they have no jobs, and many of them, the escalation of violence occurred through whatever reason. There's conflict with no jobs, you know, it might be some illegal activity, and yes, there are killings in the black neighborhood just like it is in a white neighborhood. People harm folks that they know and where they live. So it's not just a black-on-black crime. It's about society itself. And it's unfortunate we have so many guns in this country. There's more guns than people. So we have the escalation of violence, you know, but we have the police that's getting away with it, where they're not going to prison. Whereas on another hand, you've got a black person that goes to prison for something they did not do. They're innocent. They serve time but didn't do the crime. And that's disturbing to me. It's like, you know, you be a police officer, you have a license to kill. And I'm thinking in terms of what can we do to stop this? You know, recently with a Minnesota police officer, Yanez, he was cleared of all charges in killing Fernando Castro back in July 2016, and he was cleared in June of 2017. And there was video footage of the actual killing all over a traffic stop. We are being murdered by having a wallet in our hands, candy in our hands, a book in our hands. We're being murdered. Our people are being murdered. Justifiable homicide. How dare the court system say it's okay? And they have the evidence in front of their face. They have the cameras, the video cameras that's attached to the police vehicle. And they see everything. You have people with camera phones that's videotaping the actual disturbing incident that occurred, but yet they still exonerated of the killing. Why is it that our lives don't matter, but yet a white person's lives matter? We have a lot of work to do in this country. I believe this country has failed black people. We have to line ourselves together as one. We can't depend on a white man to save us. Because when we get killed out here, when our people get killed out here and leaving the family members to grieve every second, every minute, every day, and they're being ignored in for cries for justice for their loved ones not here today, and they get no justice whatsoever. Nobody's paying attention because it might not happen to their family, or they might not have a friend that has happened to them. And it's just people, it's like people are desensitized to what's going on in this country. It's very disturbing because I think we're heading to a police state because the current administration, the Trump administration, they are leading to a police, even Louisiana, the governor, Democratic governor in Louisiana, it supports a police state. And that, you know, we cannot allow. The police force, the law enforcement have all the weapons, assault weapons, all that, and they are willing to take that on and attack the citizens. They are willing to even kill protesters, call them people that's disturbing the peace, you know, and call them basically, you know, that they're trying to excite a riot. So they have all kinds of false information, the police and the politicians, and saying that, you know, the police had acted accordingly when they physically assault people who are out there protesting against the fascist government. And it's real disturbing right now that so many people are under attack, you know, by law enforcement because they're protesting, they're assembling, and that's their constitutional right. You know about that, Reverend Pinckney, because you just was released from prison and serving prison time because you spoke, you know, which you, that was your First Amendment right to speak out against the atrocities going on in your community against the Whirlpool Corporation takeover. And that's going on across this country when it comes down to corporations taking over, the billionaires. So we're just puppets for the billionaires, the millionaires. That's what we are. I feel that they are the slave masters, the new era of the slave masters right now, to control the poor by taking away opportunities to have jobs and adequate housing. Food is not tainted with poison, adequate health care. They want to take away all that. And for what? It won't trickle down to us, the millionaires, the billionaires, what they have and what we don't have. It's not going to give us a dime.
Absolutely.
But somehow these ignorant people out here today feel that, you know, having these people in charge, that it's okay. And I say many of them feel because they feel that America, make America great again. This is what Trump's motto was throughout his presidential campaign, make America great again, meaning we're going to take it away from these black folks. We had a black president for 8 years. We're going to take away all the stuff that tried to do or whatever. We're going to take away all that and the health care, Affordable Act care, all that, and just expose people to death. Over 20 to 30 million people will be affected by the proposed cuts of their health care, leaving people out there not being treated for their cancer, not being treated for their heart condition, not being treated for a number of serious illnesses.
Absolutely.
Because of greed that we have in this society, the racism, the feel that they are better than the indigenous people.
Absolutely.
The
Marcina.
People, the homeless people. So they just
Marcina.
Don't care about us.
Listen, can you wrap it up? Take 1 minute and wrap it all up for us, please.
Oh,
and,
okay.
I really appreciate you. I think that, you know, you did an excellent job yesterday, and I'm so proud of you. And what you're saying has a lot of merit to it, and I appreciate you. But take 1 minute and wrap it up. I got to bring on my next guest.
Okay, because I didn't really know how much time I had in the first place.
Oh, okay.
But, But anyway, yeah, I'll wrap it up because there's so much to really go into, and it takes a long time. I just want to say that I'm having a demonstration coming up on July 14th in regards to a teenager that had shot two cops on his porch because there was recent burglaries in the neighborhood and they didn't identify themselves properly. He did not know they were police officers, so he's faced with multiple felonies and 20 years in prison. So we're having that in Juwan Plummer. It's going to be at 1441 St. Antoine, Detroit, Frank Murphy Hall of Justice. And that would be it'll be Friday coming up, July 14th, 8 in the morning. We ask people to join us in support of this young gentleman. He's 19 years of age. And so we want people to come out and join us also in the courtroom at 9 in the morning. So that's what I wanted to let people know about that case. The judge is Thomas Cameron, and we're looking forward for people to come down there in support of it. Juwan Plummer, and he, and by the way, they were injured, but they weren't killed.
Amen.
So I just wanted to add that on. The struggle continues. Thank you
so much. Very good. And hey, I really appreciate that. And don't forget, on Tuesday, July the 11th, we will be at Barron County Courthouse to protest the corruption that exists inside the courthouse with the judges, prosecutors, and the people that work there. And I just want to thank you, Marcina, and for the work you did yesterday. You did a tremendous job, and I love you. And just keep up the good work, you know? Yeah. And my wife also, thank you. And we're going to keep this thing moving. I'm going to bring on my good friend, Monica Patrick Lewis, my girl.
Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. How you doing today?
Well, first of all, I just want to tell you how excited we are. We're still sort of, I think, bubbling from yesterday's celebration of your release and homecoming, and couldn't be more grateful for the work that you and Mother Pinckney do, and also just hearing Miss Marcina's voice as well, because she has been a wonderful linchpin for the community to be able to just be updated as to where you are and what's happening with you. And so want to also thank her for just doing a yeoman's job of keeping the community abreast and connected to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and I want to thank you and Deborah and for extremely for the work you're doing and the work you're doing now, because a lot of people don't understand the issue with the water. Can you kind of enlighten us a little bit about the issue about the water, please?
Yes, sir. Well, Reverend Pinckney, as you know, and you told us years ago, it's not about one thing, but it's about everything.
That's right.
And it couldn't be more true than it is with the issue of water. What we know about water is that the city of Detroit was taken into an illegal and corrupt bankruptcy because it sits on 21% of the world's fresh water. Also, for over 100 years, Detroit has been managing its own water system and sanitation. About 3.8 million Michiganders get their water from the city of Detroit, almost half the state of Michigan. And in all of that time of servicing and providing water services to those 125 municipalities and townships, we never poisoned anybody. But under emergency management, in their haste to steal Detroit's water, they actually poison Flint. And so we've got to constantly remind our family that the austerity policies that were created under emergency management, by setting aside democracy, by being able to place a dictator over municipalities and school systems that could set aside pensions and be able to destroy union contracts, and be able to seize public assets and sell it and dispose of it for a dollar. At the same time, while they're leaving all of this tremendous debt with the people that reside in these communities. So this is why you have a situation in Detroit where we still have, we no longer have an individual emergency manager. We have a commission of emergency managers known as the Financial Review Commission. And so many communities that have been under this dictatorship are still being regulated and controlled by this hidden governance. And so while people think they're electing their elected officials, you may be electing them, but those people still don't have their full chartered powers to be able to legislate and provide executive leadership on your behalf. And so what we know with water is that water is being privatized around the globe. Many of the banks that benefited from the contrived bankrupting of Detroit are the same banks that are buying up the aquifers around the globe. Many of the law firms, one of the largest law firms in the country and around the globe, Jones Day, has had its hands in the creation of the emergency manager law. They also have had their hands in the negotiations of the bankruptcy for both the city and its creditors. They have had their hands in advising Veolia, which is a private international manager of water systems that has a D rating globally because it's done such a poor job of protecting and maintaining the quality of water. We also know that the DeVos family is connected to Veolia. The DeVos family, the same DeVoses that are privatizing public education, are also privatizing water, and transportation at many of your airports is under their control and jurisdiction. What we also know about Detroit and as it relates to Flint and water is that in these two particular communities, you have some of the most egregious, aggressive policies for shutting off water than any other community that's serviced by that water system. So you have in Detroit and Flint, if you don't have running water in your home for 72 hours or more, you're in jeopardy of losing custody of your children. You have right now in the city of Flint over 8,000 households in jeopardy of being foreclosed on just because they owe water debt because they can't pay for water that they can't consume. You have in the city of Detroit people being shut off. Over 100,000 households have been shut off in the last 3 years just based on the fact that people can't afford to pay for the water. And then you have this looming threat, in addition to taking your children, they can use something called eminent domain to seize your property. So you can live in a house without lights and gas, but if you can't afford your water, you're immediately threatened with the seizing of your property and the taking of your children. So this is a big reason why we're in this fight, because we see these as weapons of gentrification being used all across the country and around the globe. We have seen this used in Baltimore. We've seen it used in Highland Park. We're seeing it used in Flint and Detroit. We're seeing it used in other parts of the country. And so what we really need the family to do is pay attention to the fact that there's a report that came out the 1st of February from Michigan State University that says that 35% of America will not be able to afford its water in the next 5 years. So we are already in a water scarcity insecurity crisis. And nobody's speaking to this issue beyond talking about water infrastructure. Water infrastructure is just one component of the issues we have. The biggest issue we have is water unaffordability and a lack of access to clean, safe, and affordable water. And so we are, in my mind, water is the biggest thing that connects us. But also right now in this hour, if we allow it to be commodified and treated as only having worth on the market, then what we're seeing is going to happen repeatedly, like with Nestle, who is only paying $200 a year to take millions of gallons of water out of the watershed of the Great Lakes, while at the same time you're charging Flint for water that it cannot consume. And what I've continued to raise for the family is this, is that as we move toward more and more bottled water, what you're going to find is the quality of the water coming out of your tap is going to be diminished. Mm. And so we've got to have a couple of takeaways. You must know what the quality of your water source is. That's something that everybody has to get engaged and informed about. You have to also be prepared to meet your own needs. Should there be a boil water alert, which we've had several of those lately, or should there just be a lack of access to quality water? Which means that we have to begin to think about how to systematize at a grassroots level the ability to teach our community how to identify good quality water, how to test their own water, how to be able to speak to the results of that testing, and then also how to mobilize themselves to create internal systems of water distribution should there be an emergency in your community. And so these are the things that we're lifting up to the family right now. Also, for those that are looking at policies, there's over 16 pieces of legislation that are on the books right now that is being maneuvered through the legislative body of the state of Michigan by both Democrats and Republicans, because what we're finding, too, among the more rural family members is that many of our rural farmers and persons are having difficulty accessing quality water because their wells are either drying up or they're contaminated. But if we allow them to racialize this water issue, that only urban centers are struggling with it and it's only because black folks don't want to pay their bills, then that narrative wins, but we all lose. But if we begin to connect the dots and talk about the fact that water is a human right and that what we're fighting for is that all can drink and that all would be able to eat, and because of that interconnectedness and the uplift of humanity, then that is our fight. Our fight is for everyone to have equitable access to clean, safe, and affordable water. And that, wow, to me, is a uniter as opposed to a divider.
Very good. Let me say this to you. So water is a human right. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is.
When you think about it, that's one of the things that you almost have to have, well, you have to have in order to survive. And what we're doing now, we don't really get it. If this water don't bring people together, the unified people, I don't care whether you black, white, red, yellow, green, blue, whatever color you think you want to be, I don't care. We got to unite, and we got to become as one. And I think you are the perfect person to bring people together, because I know you're more than qualified to do this. And I must confess, me and my wife, we both love you very, very much. And when I don't hear from you or when I be trying to get in touch with you, I be saying, oh, no. So, I know how to get in touch with you now. You see, I know how to contact the people to get you now, because
yes, sir.
Yeah, but I tell you, the fight over this water is just beginning. Just like you said, people don't get it. It's going to be, if this don't bring the people together, nothing will. And we talk about how the government is targeting individuals. That the target individual, the one that the government, that's just a tip of the iceberg. But this water and that combination is going to bring about something. And I'm hoping it doesn't bring about destruction. I had one of the awfulest dreams that a person can have last night. I had a dream that the Russians came over here along with the Chinese and North Korea and took over this country. And it was I kept saying that can't happen. Mm. But in reality, it can happen, because we're so divided here and so selfish towards the smaller people, and then the oppressor is oppressing us. Anything can happen if we don't watch ourselves. And I could see this happening. It was one of I couldn't even sleep last night. I should have been able to sleep good after that wonderful, wonderful homecoming. But yet I couldn't sleep last night because I kept thinking something big is about to happen. And I didn't want to miss it, So I'm going to try to stay awake until something happens. And that's the way my dream was. But it's only a dream. So let's not take it personal, those out there. It's only a dream. Let's leave it at that. But listen, you got about 2 minutes. Why don't you tell us, clean it up in 2 minutes, tell us what you want us to do, how to help you, or do whatever needs to be done.
Yes, sir. Well, there's a couple of things. One is that we need the family to actually begin to deputize themselves and see themselves as empowered to bring about solutions for our own liberation. And so places where you can get informed, there's a website, our website, which is wethepeopleofdetroit.com, wethepeopleofdetroit.com. You also can go to the website of affordablewaternow.org, affordablewaternow.org. If you're wanting to be tapped into more of the science and the research that we're doing, there's also just go to the We the People page and click on community research. There you can see the mapping that we're doing that's regional, that also is connecting now to national and international work. If you have young people that are interested in an international exchange around water, we'll be part of co-hosting a dialogue between Flint and Detroit youth with Palestine to just talk about the similarities of oppression and what those patterns look like. And then the last thing I would say, too, is that if you are there in Benton Harbor, please connect to Reverend Pinckney and Banco and the work that he's doing, because it is connected to our work as well, the fight for land, which is still ongoing around Gene Clark Park. We see that as connected to the water struggle and land as well, because what we know is anywhere where land is adjacent to water and people of color own that land, they are coming after it and wanting to seize it and control it. And so we're just hoping that this piece will empower all of you to see that we all are a part of a collective solution to save ourselves. So I'm excited about the work. I know we're going to get to the mountaintop, and I'm so grateful to God to have you back in the saddle again, Reverend Pinckney, right where you belong.
Thank you. And I want to thank you for taking over the radio show while I was gone, and all the work that you do. And yesterday I was so happy to see you, and I have to repeat, I was talking about you behind your back, and I'm so glad that you forgave me. But listen, Monica, thank you, and if you ever need me, please do
yes,
not
sir.
Hesitate to call me. And if you call me,
yes,
I promise you, I will come. That's a promise. And I want you to give your daughter a big hug for me and your mother. Make sure you call your mother
yes,
and let her know that I said, hey, love you all. Take care now. All right. Oh, that's a one beautiful young lady. I just love her, and she's right there. Let me bring in my good friend Robert. He's been one of the most active guys I know, and he's my friend. And I tell you, when I was in prison, he was Johnny on the spot. There was nothing too great for him to do, and he did it too. He sent me about 5 books called The Choice, and I've been reading the book, and I see why they don't want to end there now. So, Robert, my buddy, my friend, my guy, talk to me.
Thank you, Reverend Pinckney. I know your time is short. You're shortening up here. But, yeah, I was listening to you mention about your dream. You know, someone had that nightmare back in 1492 when this caveman came here and invaded the land. And it would be it's only a turnabout. The Russians or the Chinese or whoever are coming here now to invade. You know, they've gone all over the world. Australia, South Africa, go on and take over the land and gentrify the people or massacre the people who were there. And someone was talking about the what's going on now currently. The Kerner Commission reports is a document that everyone should be studying. In 1967, when President Johnson commissioned that group to study the civil unrest across America, and they came back and said the problem. And he thought that the communists were behind the riots going on, tearing up Detroit, L.A., Chicago, what have you. And they came back and said, the problem is not in the black community, it's the white community. We created it.
Yeah.
But in that sense, because, you know, we're still in the land of our captivity. The minister was on first and talked about that. We are the only ones who are not migrants, settlers, immigrants, or refugees. So even with the water, everything, the land should be free to us. We shouldn't have to pay for anything. You know, we didn't choose to come here. The other folk who come in here, they can argue that, you know, racism. But we're a different group, a different process going on here. But so I know your time, you're coming up on the end of your hour here. So, you know, it's a pleasure hearing you and speaking to you earlier today on a different radio show down in Miami. And you know, continue to work and continue to struggle. And everyone who's been on, there are different agendas out there, but we need to come together so
Amen.
We can be one force.
Absolutely. You see, you know, you said something really powerful. You know, we got to unify. We, you know, and here's the thing.
Right.
You don't have to like each other to work together.
Oh, absolutely.
One of the things that we got to learn to do is work together. And
right.
Cause we got a common goal whether we want to face it or not. So we need to move to a whole different level, and it's a level that we can move to. But I want to thank you so much, Robert. It's been a pleasure just being your friend, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Likewise.
Tuesday. And, you know, all this time.
Yeah, we want to.
It's been 2.5 years or more since I even looked in your eye. So it's
right.
You know, I get the opportunity. And we can talk about the 30 stolen months or whatever that we feel like talking about. Because
we're going to get that back. We're going to get them back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You've been more than a friend, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
My brother. All right.
We'll talk soon.
Very soon.
Right.
All right. Ed Billings, are you there?
Yes, Reverend. How are you?
Great. How about yourself?
Oh, good. Well, I did work on a cartoon this morning, scanned it into my computer, and it kind of made it look good. I sent it to your personal phone, and I hope you like it, but we'll talk about that later.
My phone don't pick up stuff like that.
I'll email it to you later. Okay, now I know. Now I know.
I'm still in the Stone Age myself.
It kind of takes us. I don't even carry a cell phone. But
yeah.
Well, I've been listening to the last two callers, and I will say racism does exist. And the last caller, where he said the white community created this problem, yes, we did. Absolutely, we did. I'm not going to argue that one little bit. We continue to do these things. I mean, it's not just something that, okay, well, after the Civil War ended, slavery was abolished, and we lived happily ever after. Then the Civil Rights Movement, and then we lived happily ever after. That's a delusion. Okay. Colorado Springs, the city where I live in, is a fine example of racism, and I'll tell you why. I don't remember if you were still free when Freddie Gray was killed in Baltimore, my home city.
I was free when he got killed, but when doing the trial, I was in prison.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you a little rundown, and I'm going to expose these fake activists. And I'm referring to the NAACP, Colorado's chapter of the NAACP, the Pikes Peak Justice and Peace Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still cartooning for Dr. Tucker, and we both wanted a march here in Colorado Springs for Freddie Gray. All these white so-called hippie activists, and I refer again to students at Colorado College, the Pikes Peak Justice and Peace Commission, and even, dare I say it, the NAACP, what they did was they had a drumming circle so far off from the public eye. In other words, they wanted to silence us. Some of the white so-called activists in Colorado Springs were coming up with every excuse not to do it. And then, of course, some of them were putting up all lives matter, rah, 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 you know. The only thing that was missing were their Halloween costumes known as pillowcases and sheets.
Mm.
But I really ranted and raved about it, and I took it personal because Baltimore is where I come from. Freddie Gray should not have been killed. Well, months later, I was talking to a friend, and I'm not going to mention her name, but to make the long story short, she caused legal trouble for me. I almost went down, Reverend Pinckney, and money that I had saved up, I had to pay an attorney to fight this. As you're aware, I have had trouble with my local union that I'm a member of, and I can't mention who I work for, but I can mention that this local union, a president being friends with the president of the NAACP, who hates Dr. James Tucker for his true activism. And, of course, my opinion is decided to try and make example of me for pairing up with Dr. Tucker, which didn't work, puts a restraining order on me, accusing me of violent intentions, which, on the good note, the accusations against me were dismissed in court, however, left me broke.
Mm.
And I tried to hold President Kim Cordova accountable via the labor board, and the labor board said it's okay what she did. So what we're seeing here, okay, is we're headed on the paths to destruction.
Absolutely.
And what we also have is this new generation of millennials, and I am seeing this firsthand. It seems to be their only concern is texting amongst their friends, no matter where they're at, whether they're at work, whether they're on the street, and they're getting lazier. And, of course, I believe that an establishment, okay, referring to the banks, referring to the major corporations,
Dr. Billings, listen to this. We're not going to be able – I know you got a good thought there. You're going to have to come on next week and finish this up. And I also want to tell you one thing before time could run completely out. Your cartoon was during my trial was an exhibit, which was I'm very, very grateful of you. And I want you to know I really appreciate you. But next week you have to come on and do whatever you need to do.
If I can. I unfortunately,
do what you can.
I have to work before the show, so I won't be able to. But
yes.
I am happy to have had this time today with you. And I will keep in touch with you, sir.
All right, and don't forget the cartoon.
I have a crazy work schedule.
And thank you so much. And listen, everybody, my TI friends, Ken Rose, you know, you have been more than a friend to me, Ken, and I really, really appreciate you. I'm going to miss you when you leave out of here. But listen, I want you to stay tuned, tune in anytime that you want to say a few words, because next week I'm going to have a TI on. I don't know how long he's going to be on, but he will be on next week. My TI will be starting again. It won't be long. On that note, I got to say goodnight to everybody. I want to thank everybody for being on. It was a tremendous show. It will be sent out to Ed Overman, and it's going to go national and international. And great job, everybody. Thank you so much. Love you all. Have a great night.